This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hello and welcome to Plato's Cave, coming to you from Australia for Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com. My apologies, but my Skype didn't want to do what I wanted it to do. It just happens sometimes. I am sorry. Here we go. It is home, Freedom Slips that is, to fresh, relatively uncensored ideas and conversations in the chat room and a place to get your merch. The station is not beholden to anyone, but does require your support. Please donate or subscribe to the site. Now, in fact, buy some of that awesome merch. Or, alternatively, go into the chat room. Go into the archives. All of the hosts' shows are there, and it's free at the moment, so knock yourself out, please. Go ahead and grab that merch. Okay, now, this is show number 17, I want to say. Yes, 16. Sorry, this is show number 16. Can't believe I've done this 16 times already. It's brilliant. Now, you can catch the Cave on air online on your smart device, so grab an app to listen anyway, or listen at home on a Grace Tabletop Digital Radio. Why not join the club and join the chat? As I said, it's always very elucidating. I'm going in there now as we speak. My entire machine is very slow today. Before I start broadcasting in earnest, please let me acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in Australia, where I am, beautiful Pemulwuy. It's the Darug people, and I would like to pay my respects to elders past, present, and future. Thank you very much. Again, sorry in the chat. My Skype was playing up and my entire system is really oddly slow. But that's okay. We're here now. And we're talking about the onion. Layers and layers of onion that you have to peel back. Obviously, right? That's what needs to happen. For some reason, I can't record my session here. That's really odd. So this show may not be up anywhere. Again, wonderful, wonderful Skype. Nope, I can't get it to record. Oh, you gotta love it. You gotta love it. Oh, yeah. Okay. The onion. Okay. Well, let's just say that this show is number 16, and it'll be the one that's missing from the YouTube archives. Potentially, I might get it later from the Freedom Slips archives. That should be fine, I hope. So, yeah. That's a first. Oh, yeah, clearly my Skype is not working properly. I may. Is it because I spoke about Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell last week? Is it? Well, if it is, I don't really apologize, but fair cop, if you want to sabotage me, that's okay. But we did talk about the onion. We talked about law. We talked about the rule of law. We talked about how there are separate systems for separate people on our planet, and it's largely dictated by wealth and power. And usually those two go hand in hand. Not always, but most of the time, wealth and power go hand in hand. So what does that mean? Well, ultimately, what it means is that we, well, most of us, I imagine that they're listening to this particular show right now, are the perceived underclass, and the parasites are what, well, are the ones that are ruling us. Thank you, Valerie. Much appreciated. Apparently, I'm coming through loud and clear. That's awesome. But yeah, look, and this kind of mentality has existed probably since, I want to say, the beginning of time, probably. Whatever time is, that is. And certainly within this reality matrix, there was always a class division. As far as history goes back and well into prehistory, I'm sure there's always talk of the ruling classes, the parasites, and the people that actually do the work and drive civilization forward. That's most of us, believe it or not. Because they don't contribute. See, the parasitic class has always existed. And for the most part, and for the longest time, they have kept us in check through violence, or force, if you will. Ignorance, that's a good one. Fear is the best one. And fear is, of course, the one that's keeping us in check right now. And it does its job rather well. However, what is really interesting what is really interesting is the mechanisms that have been deployed over the, well, over the millennia, really, to control us, right? And they've only ever really changed, not in kind, but in design, right? So, like I said, religion was a big one that sort of, you know, came and went. And believe it or not, for the longest time, people thought that it was a God-given right to rule over others. A God-given right, or God's given right, as it were. But that didn't really wash very well in modern times, so that it all changed and, you know, it was amended by the people. And we all live in the illusion that we are voting for the people that rule over us. You know, for the people, by the people. Yeah, sure. I believe that. I got a bridge for sale real cheap if you want to get it. No. But one of the best tools has been ignorance, apart from fear. And ignorance is not an absence of intelligence. It's just an absence of knowledge. Just because a bottle is empty doesn't mean it cannot hold water, right? And for the longest time, again, the education was only afforded to those that were in power, or, you know, some others that were sort of, you know, included in the ranks of power. But the great mass of people did not get an education. Simply not. They were left in ignorance of anything and everything, in fact. Which makes it easy to control. If you don't know what's going on, if you have no real good understanding of the world that moves it, you're at the mercy of those that do. Once again, the parasitic class. Okay. And like I said, this kind of ruler and ruled arrangement has been the same. And it hasn't changed. It seems to have changed, but it really hasn't. There is a very clear delineation. And it's a little bit more complex now because the actual people in charge, I'm going to call them people, you will never ever see, and you have no idea who they are. I don't know who they are. I've never seen them. I know they exist, I don't know where. Okay, I couldn't point them out in the street. I don't know what the names are. I know what the ancient names are. I don't know what the names are today. And then you've got the next layer, which are the inmates, the trustees, if you will, the people that have become institutionalized, that retain their memories through each reincarnation cycle, or might not even die at all, potentially. And they are stuck here more than we are, because even though they can conceive of a way out, they might even know the mechanism of escape, they can no longer escape. They are bound to this reality. And think of them as little shriveled up appendices of a larger body. That's what this world has done to them. They can no longer leave. They think. Can they leave? Well, I don't know, possibly, but they think they cannot. And that's really all that matters. Right. Whereas most of us that don't carry too many past life memories with us, we are relatively unencumbered. We do a great job of encumbering ourselves in our lifetime while we're here, but we are, for the most part, unencumbered and have the opportunity to work on our redemption. No, not in the Christian sense. Well, not really. And I do make a lot of references to the Bible and Christian belief systems. That's where I grew up. It's an easy tool of explaining myself. But please don't think that I'm religious. I am not. I have faith, and that's a different thing, but I'm not religious. I don't follow any prescribed religion. At some point, I will share with you what I believe, but not quite yet. Suffice it to say, I believe in the way. I believe in living a good, blessing. Yes, Studio Ace Life, and this is Mackie, Plato's Cave. Yeah, so, the way. I believe in the way. I believe in doing the right thing. I believe in a lot of things that a lot of the great thinkers believed in. And it is really... Oh, now it started recording. I didn't press the button. that's just nuts. How is that even possible? Oh, baby. Okay, it's just crazy. Yes, I'm here. Mackie is in the chat. Anybody wanted to ask a question or have any comments, I'm more than happy to respond. Thank you, Valerie, for pointing that out. It's all good. But let's get back to living an ethical life. Right? I think it is important to live a life where you can look yourself in the mirror, look at yourself in the morning and still go on with your day. If you can achieve that, to be able to look at yourself, look at your reflection, and go, yep, I've done the best I can. Or even if you haven't, I'll try better. Right? I mean, everybody slips. Nobody's perfect. Anybody who says they're perfect is definitely not. Hey, blessing. Yeah, I hear you. Unfortunately, though, in my opinion, again, just my opinion, I think we're stuck here, and we have been stuck here for quite some time. But I will share with you how we're going to get out. Right now, we're following the same kind of show cycle on the Shiny Side Out. Stick with it. We're talking about how to get out of here. Maybe even permanently. Funny thing is this, right? Some of us have gotten out of here. And they chose to come back and help the rest of us. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I guess that's why they got out. And that's the kind of mindset that you need to have to get out. And I agree with Valerie. Look, I'm talking to the chat room, so if you are listening to this after the fact, next time try to come on live and try to get into the chat. Just get into the chat. It's not trying necessary. Just go in and be part of the conversation. But Valerie is right. We got to hang in there. We got to live our lives to the best ability, because just giving up doesn't help us at all. The more we learn this life, better off we are in the next, I believe. Yes, we forget most of it, but I believe there's residual wisdom that stays with us. You know how certain people are drawn to certain things, and some people are drawn to other people? There's like almost like a magnetic kind of attraction between people, but also by people to ideas, to ways of life, to insights. And sometimes these insights build on each other, right? That's a good question. I'll come to that blessing. It's a hard road. So blessing is asked, how will it happen when it does? Leaving. That is. Well, it's hard work, I have to say. It is hard work. But like I said, some of the memories, come from life to life, and there are certain directions we push by ourselves, in fact, I think. The pineal gland. I didn't want to talk about it quite this early, but since the question was asked, the pineal gland is critical in our escape while we are still here, right? You can work on yourself through meditation and an ascetic lifestyle, and that essentially means abstaining from eating meat, drinking alcohol, taking drugs. You have to remove all your earthly shackles, if you will, or all your attachments, all your desires, anything that could possibly bind you to this life. This was best illustrated in a Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Ebenezer Scrooge is visited on the first night by his friend Marlowe, who had died some years previously. And Marlowe comes and visits him draped in chains. And Ebenezer asks him, what happened to you? He goes, well, these are the chains I forged for myself in my life. And it's a beautiful analogy, because that's what we do. We chain ourselves to this place through our desires, through you're tied to all the things that seem to matter. Right? A rich man has a hard time getting through the gates of heaven. Who said that, right? Easier, in fact, for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the gates of heaven. And look, I'll level with you here, right? Jesus, not his real name. That's his Romanized name. His real name was probably Yeshu or Joshua or something like that. He taught the same thing I'm talking about, right? And if you read the old Gnostic texts, you'll understand it even better. But he was preaching the way. He was preaching the way to get out of here. He was very clear. He was crystal clear, right? He had no intentions of reforming. He had no intentions of creating Christianity. That was never on his mind. He never thought about that. Right? Paul did that for us. Or Saul. There was a guy called Saul. He was actually prosecuting Christians. And then on the road to Damascus, he had this, insight, this vision experience. And he changed his name to Paul and became, the most fervent proselyte in the Western church. He started building, all these letters from Paul to all these cities, Ephesians, etc., etc. That's the guy. He started the early church in Asia Minor. These are all Greek cities, Greek colonies in what is now Turkey. It wasn't until much later the church moved, some of the church moved to Rome. The rest of the church, I guess, remained in Constantinople, which is now Istanbul. So you had this, the schism, the first schism you had between the East Roman Church and the West Roman Church. Anyway, so that happened. So Jesus never intended to create Christianity. He wanted to reform Judaism. That was his intention, his people. His people were Jews. He wanted to reform the Jewish religion. And that's why he got so upset with the way the temple was treated, turned into a marketplace, etc., etc. He wasn't happy with that at all, right? Because all of these things are binding us to this place. And it's an interesting thing, right? Because the Jewish people were looking for a revolutionary, a rebel that would free them from the Roman occupation. That's really what they were hoping for. The Messiah would do that, right? Not really the Messiah's job to do that. Interestingly enough, Jesus, or Yeshua, let's call him Jesus because you all know what I'm talking about. He said to a man who asked him, should we pay taxes to the Romans. And he said, well, show me the coin. The man took out the coin and he said, Jesus said, well, whose picture is on the coin? And the man looked at the coin and said, well, this is the picture of the Roman emperor. Jesus said, well, and give to the emperor what's the emperor's, and give to God what's God's. Meaning, of course, that none of the material things of this earth are of any importance, right? What is God's? Love, right? What Jesus meant was love. Give love, give hope, you know, present the other cheek. Love your neighbor as you would love yourself. Love your enemy, in fact. Love your enemy? What? Really? This is a completely different message from the Old Testament. Blessing. Churches are full of lies because the original message was corrupted. Okay, now, churches aren't a Jewish thing, but certainly monotheism, that the way we see it now, the Abrahamic religions, the ones that hark back to Abraham, absolutely started as Judaism. Then, you know, Christianity was formed, and then, you know, some 600 years later, Islam came along, but they're all based on the same premise. It's a monotheistic Abrahamic religion, right? With the same basic stories from Genesis through to the advent, well, of Jesus. Now, the Old Testament is pretty much identical, or the stories therein, across all three religions. Right? It only differs when it talks about the lives of both Jesus and Muhammad, obviously, right? And again, neither the Jews nor the Muslims believed that Jesus was the Son of God, but just another prophet, a great prophet, no doubt, but not the Son of God. The Jews are still waiting for the Messiah. Okay? And Blessing here says, this planet seems like it's full of lies, war, and bloodshed. Bingo. Yes, it is. In fact, if you invest in lies, war, and bloodshed, you'll do really well. Okay, now think about that for a second. You will do really well. All right, if you lie, if you invest in war, meaning, you know, weapons, ammunition, etc., and if you, you know, are most wars due to religion, asks Blessing. That's a pretext. It is certainly used as an excuse, and it was used as a mechanism to divide people. So in order for the parasitic class to stay in power, because there aren't many of them, they need to deploy something that we like to call divide and conquer. What does that mean? So you go somewhere, and there's a native population there, for argument's sake, and the British were excellent at this. The British were masters at this. What you do then is you pit those people against each other, divide them as best as you can. You know, you can elevate one group over the other, or you give them privileges the other group doesn't have. And when they're sufficiently divided, you walk in and take over, because there's no united front to oppose you. We, the great masses, the great unwashed, all of us, we don't present a united front. We are divided amongst ourselves. The reasons for division are manifold. Could be race. Race is a good one. Language is one of the best. Language divides us like nothing else. Religion is a good one. Even within religions, people are divided. Sex, male, female, that's a great one as well. And it goes on and on. And the list of what divides us is a lot longer than what unites us. Okay? So it's really very interesting. And you have to understand that the parasites take the long view, because they can. And even if you're born into a non-parasitic family, but just a family of power, like the obvious people that we see, like the royal family, take for example, the royal family or any of the royal families or political dynasties or whoever. Now, these people are born into power. The rich, wealthy families of America or elsewhere, you know, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, et cetera, et cetera. Now they're as lost as we are, but they're taking advantage of the situation because they've figured it out, right? But they're still here against their will, in my opinion. However, they don't have all the insights, right? They know what they want and they know what they do, and they do it. But those are the people that we see, the ones that are in actual charge, like I said before, we never see. We never know who they are. But if you're born into power, and this is really the point I'm trying to make, you take a different view of the world. Right? Let me break it down for you. So all of us, I guess, again, I can't speak for you, but we all live fairly regular lives, right? We are raised, we look after our parents or not. We have children of our own or not, but we just live regular lives and we take the medium-term view where we maybe want to leave something for our children. Let's say we work hard and want to leave a bit of a legacy if we can. You know, that's great. That's a really great thing for you to do. Now, these people don't think like that. They think in terms of centuries and millennia. They think about generational wealth. And because they're removed from us and because they're never really in the line of fire per se, they always have a way out. They don't go to war. Okay, they don't participate in conflict. They send us to do that. But because they don't see us as equals, they see us as expendable resources, right? To be used to whatever necessary means they have in mind. That's how they see us. I mean, people always say, how can we put these people in harm's way? If you ascend to a position of power, president, prime minister, king, queen, et cetera, you know, then you have to take that view. And that view is something you learn on your ascension. Or maybe you're born into power, right? Then you're brought up with it. But you don't look at people like you and I would look at them. Okay? To the parasites, we don't really matter. In the long run or the short run, we have no real value for them. In the olden days, 100 years ago or so, they called us useless eaters. And they still have that same kind of mindset. Because they're in power. And they decide what happens, pretty much. And because we let them. We let them, right? We do let them. They've fooled us, and they've done a great job of it. Divide and conquer, right? They have divided us amongst ourselves, against ourselves. We cannot stand together, even if we tried. We couldn't. I'd love to see it, but it will not happen, because there's always some interest group or some consideration that will keep people apart, right? And I'll talk about language at some other point, because that's a really interesting one. So they keep us apart, but they take the long view, and they take the view of, well, expenditure, right? When the towers fell, for example, right, and 3,000 people lost their lives, everybody thought, oh my God, this is just horrific. Yes, it is. And to you and me, it is horrific. But to the people in power, it isn't. These are the kind of people that drop bombs on cities. My grandmother and my mother and her siblings were in Dresden that night when it was firebombed. 100,000 people burned to death. Okay? 100,000. 100,000. Nagasaki, Hiroshima. 100,000 each. The invasion of Iraq cost roughly a million civilians their life. Right? So it's a very different kind of value system they have. They have no qualms at all of sending young soldiers, you know, into war. No qualms at all to come back. You know, well, if they do come back, you know, some die, of course. But if they do come, they might come back crippled or damaged. You know, shell shock, it used to be called. Now it's, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And you look at the veterans that come out of these wars. Some are damaged beyond repair, but the people that sent them, they don't care. They make a big hoo-ha about caring, but in reality, they don't care. Otherwise, they wouldn't send them over and over and over again. Now, if there's a just war, if there's a just conflict where you're going to step in to stop something horrible from happening, right? I think we can all agree that's a good thing to do. And you can argue, if you wanted to, that World War II was such a war where, you know, we stepped in and stopped some, you know, monstrous regime from killing more and more people. Right. We didn't do the same thing in Cambodia with Pol Pot. We didn't do the same thing in China with Mao. We didn't do the same thing with Stalin in Russia. We didn't step in. We didn't step in. Okay. We didn't step in Rwanda. 600,000 people were killed. in a matter of weeks. We didn't step in. Didn't do any of it. We stepped in when our interests were when our perceived interests were at stake. Gas pipelines, oil pipelines, heroin, poppy seeds, Afghanistan. Right? Look at the history of these wars. Look at that. Understand why they were fought. Not for justice and freedom. I mean, let's look at Afghanistan for a second here, right? And then you'll hopefully understand the point I'm trying to illustrate. If truly we had invaded Afghanistan to create a better Afghanistan, and we were there for 20 years we occupied Afghanistan, and then we left. And overnight, it just turned into a complete disaster zone. Okay? How is that possible? Where's our nation-building effort? And then Joe Biden says, no, we never hit a nation build. No, that was never the plan. Really? So why did we go there? Oh, to get Osama bin Laden. Oh, okay. Where did we find him? Pakistan. Not in Afghanistan. We found him in Pakistan. Allegedly. Right? We didn't find these elaborate cave systems with bunkers and, you know, troop transporters and you know, X-ray weapons and all that wonderful stuff that, you know, they presented to the end. That just didn't exist. We didn't invade Afghanistan to make it a better nation. We didn't invade Afghanistan to help the Afghani people. We didn't even invade Afghanistan to avenge 9/11. Okay? We invaded Afghanistan because a number of reasons. Central Asia is rich in natural gas. And the best way to get it out is through Afghanistan down into the Gulf. Right? There's meant to be a pipeline. The Taliban said, no pipeline, just before the invasion. And just before the invasion, the Taliban started to burn the poppy plants. Afghanistan was the single biggest producer of poppy in the world, which is, of course, opium, which, of course, is then refined into heroin. Biggest. But they started burning the poppy fields. Now, when the Taliban had been defeated, and, you know, poppy production went right back up where it needed to be, and the gas pipeline was built. Right? And again, no nation building. How could you even make that argument if after 20 years you leave, and after 20 years of you being there, it just goes sideways in a matter of hours and days, right? No nation building at all. Just occupation to you know, for their purposes. Then the invasion of Iraq. And no connection at all. With either Al-Qaeda or Taliban or anyone for that matter. Saddam Hussein was a socialist. He was a thorn on the side of Osama bin Laden. He was a thorn on the side of all Islamists because he was a socialist. Yeah, the Ba'ath Party are socialists. So no, that didn't happen. Yet we were there. We thousands of people lost their lives, you know, allied soldiers as well as Afghanis. In fact, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq. A million people, and you know, again, tens of thousands of soldiers lost their lives to for no apparent purpose. I mean, the whole ISIS dilemma grew right out of the war in Iraq. I'm not saying that Saddam Hussein or the Taliban, for the better, are wonderful people, that we should leave them where they are. Not at all. But make no mistake, we didn't go in there to make it better for the people or for the world, for that matter. We went in there so the money people could make more money. When Iraq was invaded, you know, the last time around, the American Navy spent all of their cruise missiles. They used all of the cruise missiles in shock and awe. All of them gone. You know how much a cruise missile costs? $1 million. $1 million. Now, how many were shot up? Thousands. Thousands. Have to be replaced. Somebody has to, you know, buy the ammunition. And so this whole bombing something into the Stone Age, then at the tail end of it comes the rebuilding process. And people made billions on the rebuilding process. There was no contract bidding system. Contracts were simply awarded. Halliburton took a lot of them. which is really surprising, right? Because Cheney was a CEO of Halliburton at some point. What a shock. You got to follow the money. Really, it's that simple, right? You got to follow the interest. Who benefits from any of these actions? Not the GIs that gave their life or were injured, either physically or mentally. None of these people benefited. Right? The true benefit was with the money people, yet again. Right? If you, and this is to your point, Blessing, if you invest in lies and war and bloodshed, you'll do just fine. You do just fine. Yes, sorry, Blessing just asked, who is the military protecting? The ones that rule the planet, not the regular people who pay taxes to support the military. That's correct. The entire system, as I outlined last time, is designed that way. The laws that exist are for you and me. We are bound by the laws. The parasites are not. They're not bound by the law. It means nothing to them. The military is protecting the status quo. The police is protecting the status quo. The courts are protecting the status quo. The laws are protecting the status quo. The politicians are protecting the status quo. Nothing worse than someone rattles at the cage, the status quo. Right? And it shifts, you know, power shifts here and there. You know, we might be seeing right now the end of the American Empire, the rise of the Chinese Empire, who knows, right? The British Empire had its day in the sun, the Spanish Empire was there, the Incans had an empire, and then, the Spanish came along. There's a shift of empires. So what? The fundamental truths remain the same. The parasites stay in power, and they don't care about countries or nations or any kind of belief system, unless it furthers and protects the status quo. Leave things as they are. Leave things untouched. Ideally, in fact, no. Cement people more. Cement the status quo more. You know, make it more unchangeable. Don't just have it as it is, but make it more resistant to change, and increase the difficulties for people to enter, if they wish to do so, into the parasitic classes, right? into the people that control the civilization. None of us were asked wanted to be part of this. See, we go to school, we're born, here we are, and if we're lucky, we live in a family that can provide for us. Know what we're going to eat tomorrow, we've got a roof over our head, fresh water, clean water. That's not for everybody, by the way. But a lot of people don't get that. But let's say we get that. Now, the people that don't get that, they've got no hope anyway, because they're just struggling to stay alive. So the parasites don't have to worry about them too much, because they're just struggling to stay alive. So, yeah, let's just not worry about those. But then there are people maybe like us too, who have access to a computer or radio or whatever, and, who have a job, who make a living, decent or otherwise. So we're born, go to school, and in school we're indoctrinated. We're not taught. No one is teaching us anymore. They're turning us into cogs that fit the machine. You're shaped so you can function in the machine. You're not asked to question the machine. No one ever teaches you to ask the question, why? Why is it like this? Why do we have to go to school? Why do we have to go to find a job? Why do I have to go to a bank to borrow money? You say to me, well, it's life, Mackie. Well, who made it that way? Who made it that way? There haven't always been banks, right? They haven't, but here we are. You know what the Amish do? Amish do a wonderful thing. You know what happens if somebody wants to build a house or a barn or whatever? They get all their friends together and they all help them build the house or the barn or whatever. As a community, they get together and do that. How about that? No bank loans, nothing like that. They're self-sufficient. Nothing worse for the system than someone who is self-sufficient. You are the system's worst nightmare. If you're self-sufficient, if you can look after yourself, right? We don't teach our children to look after themselves in school. Okay? They don't. they learn about fractions and grammar and you know, some history, which is for the most part not even correct. But they don't learn life skills. They don't learn critical thinking. They don't learn evaluating problems from all aspects. They don't learn how to ask questions. If you're lucky and you get good teachers, you do learn that. But that's not the way the system is designed. Okay? Make no mistake. It is not meant to be that way. It is meant to make sure that you fit into the machine with as little struggle as possible. And that's sort of breaking down. We see it's breaking down for various reasons. You know, climate change, if you believe it or not, doesn't really matter. I mean, weather patterns are changing. Economics, you know, the pandemic. And all of these things are being employed to keep us in fear. Because, you know, there are people that are increasingly asking the questions. There are people like, you know, you like you, the listenership of the station, that is asking questions. Just make sure you ask the right questions, please. Make sure you don't get a red herring. They don't sidetrack you. Yeah, because as soon as you start fighting amongst yourselves, they have won. I think Bigfoot is nonsense. I only believe in UFOs. I think UFOs are nonsense. I only want to hear about the Jewish conspiracy. The Jewish conspiracy is nonsense. I only want to hear about the vaccine conspiracy, etc., etc. So as soon as, even amongst ourselves here in this relatively small community, we fight. Because we're divided. You need to understand that it's all connected. There is no singular event or singular phenomenon that just exists in its own right. Everything is connected. You need to understand the totality of the picture. You need to see the whole gestalt. You need to see the form of it to understand it. You can't focus on the one thing. You must take it all in or you're lost. And we will never stand up together. And if we never stand up together, then this place will stay as it is until the end of time. Right? And some of us will make it out and others will not. We just missed a golden opportunity to get out just last year. Dave and I spoke about this on the Shiny Salad extensively, if you don't know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the awareness cascade, right? It was effectively stopped. We predicted 2020 to be a year. Well, pretty much the year it turned out to be, right? And again, just go over the shows. Every full 100, we talk about the hypothesis and see if I'm BSing you. I'm not, right? We called it out years ago. Because I believe very firmly that if things had been different and COVID hadn't come around, then the awareness cascade may very well have lifted us all up, or most of us, like a rapture kind of event. Right? We would have increased our frequency level. I'm saying this because I believe that we follow the Fibonacci sequence of numbers, and we need to find significant Fibonacci numbers. As they apply to our population, for example. And we were reaching that critical number in 2020, right? 7.76 billion. But because it was so depressed, our frequency, our vibration, through the fear. I mean, this was a global fear. This was a global, still is, I guess, a global pandemic. And it doesn't matter if it's real or not. It's completely irrelevant. It doesn't even matter if this is SARS-CoV-19. It doesn't matter. What matters is that we believe there is, and that the vast majority of the planet lived or has lived in incredible fear and discomfort for the last 2 years. I mean, we've always been kept in fear, right? But this is an unprecedented level of fear, where they got us to stay indoors for months at a time. Couldn't visit our mother, our father, our children, our friends. If we didn't have technology, and this is, again, not everybody, we wouldn't have been able to contact each other at all. And because we are living in a relatively advanced society in some, you know, Western nations, Australia and Europe, etc., America, we can do our job from home, some of us. A lot of people cannot, though. So, you know, they have the added fear and anguish of not being able to earn a living. And then, you know, of course, this is always this sort of Damocles that hangs over you with this disease. This is I have to really give it to the parasites. It was masterfully done. And assuming for a second, you know, that SARS-CoV-19 is real. It's killing people at the rate of 2 or 4% mortality rate. It's cheap. It's the cheapest way to cull the population, if that's your aim, right? I mean, it's not virulent and deadly enough for that to happen, but now seems to have some kind of effect on your fertility, believe it or not, right? SARS-CoV, anyway, so there's a fertility effect, so this might be a long drawn out decline of our population. But we said this years ago, biggest bang for your buck you get with a biological agent. Nuclear is expensive and messy. Chemical, cheap, but very, very messy. Biological, it's brilliant. It's very, very cheap. And you know, you've got to watch out for mutations, which we're seeing right now, right? But as far as cost is concerned, this is the most effective, cost-effective mechanism to do what they needed to do. Brilliant. Brilliant. Right? Yes, it's infectious, you know, and it has, you know, it hospitalizes people, which means, you know, the ICU beds are taken up, so that people are panicking, hospitals are overflowing, right? Some people die, you know, which is horrible, of course. I mean, not a lot of people die, so the disease can spread. And it's a slow incubation period, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. You don't even know you have it. It's brilliant. It's brilliantly conceived. And now we get the vaccine. Another moneymaker. You don't think those vaccines are free, do you? Pfizer and Moderna, they're making billions and billions and billions of dollars. Oh, cost money. Your tax money pays for it. Right? The governments buy it, but where does the government get the money from? From us, taxpayers. So we're buying them. And our money goes to the money people. During the financial crisis, what happened? We redistributed wealth from Main Street, like us, to Wall Street. Obama did that. Hundreds of billions. No plan of paying it back, ever. What you do with the money? Oh, no accountability either. They were paying themselves big fat bonuses. Is anybody at all concerned about that? No? You should be. Because it's happening right now. I took a cab today. I was in a taxi today, and I spoke to the driver. He was, I believe he was from South Asia. He himself mentioned it. And he said when he came to Australia, he thought, you know, that corruption only existed in South Asia. He didn't think it would happen in Australia. I said, no. My friend, corruption is everywhere. Politicians are the same everywhere. The money people, the power people, the parasites, they're the same. It's open or more open in some than in others, but it's there. I said to him, you know, some years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I can't remember exactly, the entire council of Wollongong City was sacked because of corruption charges. The entire council. I don't know how many people, 20 people, 30 people, however many people there were, right? The entire council sacked. Corrupt. Corrupt. And it's everywhere. Money here, there. I mean, funny thing is this. There's a port up in Northern Australia, in Darwin. And the politician that brokered the deal, I think it was a state politician for the Northern Territory. So Territorian, right? He brokered the deal with China, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't see how it can be in the national interest to sell a port like that to the Chinese. But whatever. That person is now working for the company that bought the port. Yeah, no, that's just a complete coincidence, right? You follow the money. The Bin Ladens, Osama Bin Laden's family, the Bin Ladens bankrolled Arbusto Oil. So what, Mickey? Well, Arbusto Oil was George W. Bush's first company, Junior. They bankrolled him. Yeah, true. Look it up. There's no... We're looking, this is why I called the show the Plato's Cave. That's why I called it that. Because we're looking at the cave wall, all these shadows, you know, that are made by, well, the puppet masters, I guess, the parasites, you know, and against maybe candlelight. And we're looking at those shadows on the wall, and we think that's real life. That's what we think it is, right? It's a beautiful analogy. If you ever, there's actually a couple of a few really good animations on YouTube or Patreon or wherever you get your content. Just Google Plato's cave animation. It's really, really cool. Just have a look. It's a very simple concept. I learned about it many, many years ago. And the concept itself, Plato come up with longer than 2,000 years ago now, right? 2,500 years ago. So a long while ago, Plato came up with that concept. And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at this puppet show of shadows on the wall. And we think that's real life. And that's in fact all of it. Whenever you open your eyes, you're looking at the shadows. Whenever you think you're here, you're not. You know, we're not living the lives we should on many levels, on many, many levels, right? And on the ultimate level, yes, we are imprisoned in our bodies and we should be somehow on a higher dimensional plane on experiencing, you know, higher frequencies, etc. But even here, there are layers and layers of unreality, of deception, of lies. You know, history. We don't know history. We only know what people tell us. And the people that tell us are usually the ones that win the wars or have won the wars. Okay? Oh, wow, that was quick. I think that's the music. So don't go away, Mitchell, Bob. Is up after this. He's got the best yeehaw in the business, and donate if you can. I will speak to you all on Sunday with the Shiny Side Out, and then on Tuesday with Plato's Cave. I hope you enjoyed yourselves. Again, my apologies for my Skype being slow.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message. Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may.